Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was in the post office the other day, and I really liked this pamphlet. It says, "Do the Right Thing, Men, 18 through 24, register." And it caught my eye. I think it was good, and it was great. But the only other thing I want to recommend to those guys in the background, I would have really caught my eye if it had said women. Just thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I
have
to say.
Well, Madam Vice Chair, I think I heard someplace that they should do that too, but I'm not sure whether that's happening or not, needless to say. colleagues, we're actually here only today for a discussion on House Strength Resolution 202 that may or may not come across to this committee. It's a concept we've heard for quite some time. I'm going to ask Representative Evans and Mr. Smith if they would come up. And, Council, would you just give us just a little background, because it's not really a formal hearing. We're just trying to understand what our colleagues in the House are doing. Just for members' information, Chair Lively has come over and seen me several times on this and is in some sort of discussions with his leadership over there. So
House Joint, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 202 came from the House side. It had a subsequent referral to Rules. It passed unanimously and would, with an amended version, it proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution that would require 2% of lottery revenues to be expended for the benefit of veterans beginning on or after July 1st, 2017.
Gentlemen, we're all ears for a few minutes.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Representative Paul Evans. I represent Monmouth, Independence, West Salem, South Salem. And myself and Representative Parrish are co-chief sponsors on this bill. And I'd like to note that the entire House Veterans Emergency Preparedness Committee are actually signers on the bill. Here's the over the course of the life of the lottery, it has taken on many different challenges. I remember when I first was working in the building as a legislative assistant to Representative Schoon at the time, was understood to be an economic development engine. And quite frankly, that's what I'm here trying to shop today. House Joint Resolution 202 is in fact an economic development engine. It is designed specifically to unlock up to $4 billion that we are currently not receiving. And it also happens to be the right thing to do. When I worked for Governor Kulongoski some time ago, the entire membership of this committee were in the legislature at that point. We worked on trying to find ways to bring state programs up to the point that federal programs would take care of our veterans. And the fact is, after 14 years at war, a lot of our nation has actually forgotten that we're still at war, and we continue to make veterans by the bushelful. And the fact is that the USVA is not doing its job. If it was, I wouldn't be here today, but it's not. And I can't change that reality. What I can do is say that right now there are 350,000 veterans, give or take, because it's an estimate, that right now the USVA only sees about 100,000 of them because of the way in which people go through the process of being put in the system. The purpose of this bill is very specific. It is to help provide funds that will be used for health care, housing, transportation, outreach. It will be designed to help provide partnership and potentially seed money for programs that we know work. And again, there's no more important goal for veterans at this point than trying to take care of the folks that have served. As the director is going to go into more detail, we currently have five different cohorts, five different generations of veterans right now, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Persian Gulf One, and the era in which the director and I served. We have 5,000 plus or minus homeless veterans in Oregon right now. We have thousands of military families that are not getting the support and services that they need. I believe that a 2%, much reduced from the original numbers that have been floated around, 2% would provide enough flexibility to actually unlock billions of dollars that we are currently not able to bring to the table. I know on the House Housing and Human Services Committee, we are focusing on trying to untap the EITC dollars, looking at potentially at some point spending dollars to try to help folks do their tax returns, then get the EITC dollars back. This is actually a similar concept, except it's a lot cheaper, and it actually promises to bring back more dollars. Again, the director can go into more detail about what we can prove as the return on investment, but the bottom line from my perspective is this. We know that throughout Oregon, veterans live, We know that throughout Oregon, there are veterans not getting the services they need, and we know that by using this type of money that is not general fund, that was designed specifically for economic development, that we can put before the voters, I think, an appropriate tool to help unlock the federal dollars that are not coming to the state but should be, and we can keep faith with the men and women we continue to send by the bushelful. And that's the concept. I look forward to any questions you have, but I'll turn it off first to Director Smith.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I want to thank Representative Evans, Representative Parrish, and his colleagues in House Veterans for introducing HJR 202 and giving it full consideration. Currently in rules on the House side, and I do expect that it will be coming over to the side, to the Senate. With any discussion of a dedication of funds, whatever the color of the money, it is a discussion about budgets, and budgets are about priorities, and budgets are about values. But a number alone in a budget is less important, or often in our budget process, we become fixated on a number. And the number is, in the budget is less important than what we actually do with the resources and what outcomes we actually deliver. And as a Marine, the Marines have a rule of three. There's three fire team members on a fire team, three fire teams on a squad, three squads in a platoon, on up to three regiments in a division. And our three priorities, whether our budget for ODVA and more broadly for the veteran services across Oregon, whether it's a cut budget, whether it's a flat budget, or whether there's an increase in resources, we have three main priorities and three main opportunities to target veteran services, to drive veteran engagement, and to mobilize broader partnerships. So with our largest opportunity to target veteran services, this committee, as on the House veteran side, well aware of the shared county and state system of veteran service offices across the state. These are the advocates in the corner of the veteran and their family as they fight to access what are largely their federal VA earned benefits. And this is a proven system, 70 years strong, from 1945 in that final year of World War II, stood up both the county system and the state system, with the county VSOs, the veteran service officers, really providing that boots on the ground, advocate in the corner of the veteran service across the state, and ODVA focusing on their training, on the claims review, and on the appellate work at the statewide level. And it is a system that we can be very proud of when we compare it to our peers across the state. And it is a system that delivers. There's always a little bit of a lag in terms of the federal VA numbers, but 2014 federal VA impact in Oregon just on the disability compensation and pension that our veteran service officers from the state and county draw down, almost $1.3 billion of just that cold hard cash of disability compensation and pension. That's up $200 million from 2013 dollars. And it equals, for every month, over $100 million flowing back into the bank accounts and wallets of Oregon veterans. It does help veterans and their families thrive, but this is also an economic impact, an infusion of our federal tax dollars back into Oregon. If we compared it just a little over a decade ago to 2003, those same disability compensation and pension numbers would have been about half, about 455, now increased to $1.3 billion, so almost doubled over the last decade. And while we are proud of that system, we know we are leaving resources just on that one segment of disability compensation and pension. We are leaving resources on the table and resources that we could draw down from the federal VA and help extend general fund at the state level. Oklahoma, with about the same number of veterans, a little more than our 330,000 in Oregon, draws down $1.8 billion in terms of the disability compensation and pension. So almost half a billion dollars extra that they are drawing down of cold hard cash from the federal VA to further extend those benefits to veterans. And when you break it out per disabled veteran, almost $20,000 per veteran is now, the number is $20,000 per disabled veteran in terms of what they each, on average, access. And everything we try to do is to drive, this is off of roughly 3 of every 10 Oregon veterans accessing their benefits. So beginning to move that needle is our highest priority and greatest opportunity, and comes off of the $10 million of general fund today that we invest. Half of it flows down to the county, and half of it stays with ODVA for the training and resources of the CVSOs. Beyond that, targeting veteran services, We want to drive veteran engagement. We are building a system for all veterans to help them and their families access their earned benefits. But we also know we have underserved population of veterans, from returning veterans of our generation to our Vietnam and our aging veterans that make up 37% of our veterans population, women veterans that make up 9% of our veterans population, and the fastest rising demographic, rural veterans. We live up and down the I-5 corridor in the major cities, but when you get out to rural counties, our rural veterans make up a quarter to a third of those county populations, and also looking at how do we better serve the military veteran families. Across those major buckets where we could go more deeply to serve, it is going to be across their health care, their mental health, their education, their economic opportunity. Beyond the disability compensation and pension from the Fed VA, almost $1 billion now of federal VA health care spending every year in Oregon that could be better leveraged and better aligned to meet the goals of Oregon veterans. The GI Bill, now $140 million spent across community colleges and universities. The HUD-VASH on the homelessness and housing front. Annual budget for the federal VA has been about $160 billion. In the president's proposed budget going forward, it will be an annual budget proposed to be $180 billion. We could do much better beyond just that disability compensation, better accessing, leveraging, and aligning what is significant federal VA spending across those policy areas for very underserved veterans populations. And that does draw down more of that federal VA money, but it also takes veterans that are currently on state safety net services, whether through Oregon Healthcare Authority, Oregon Health Authority, Department of Human Services, things that we've talked about through the Paris program and the public assistance reporting information system. How do we better identify and target veterans that are currently on general funded programs that may be better served on those federal VA systems? And beyond targeting veteran services and driving veteran engagement, it is about mobilizing broader partnerships. We know that for veterans and their families to thrive in Oregon, it's a much bigger vision and mission than just the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. This is not empire building at ODVA, but these resources could be broadly spent by the legislature and the governor's discretion to infuse this work for this specific population, but across a broad swath of agencies, public and private partners, from local governments to tribes to fellow state agencies to the nonprofits, business community, community colleges, and universities. And that partnership effort, that collaborative nature across those public and private partners is what it's going to take to address challenging issues across unemployment, homelessness, suicide prevention. It is not simply one agency's mission, but that broader collaboration that we bring to bear. And the roughly a little over $20 million is what we think this would draw down in lottery resources. Those will not solve every challenges that veterans and their families face. It is going to be through smart investments and really looking to leverage and align that funding. But the time is now. We have four generations strong across five major wars, 330,000 veterans across the state, and broad agreement and broad alignment across the governor, the legislature, the fellow state agencies, our veterans community, and partners. This is a great opportunity to consider this, and happy to take any questions.
Chair Boquist, if I could just say one thing I forgot to say earlier. Goes without saying, but I'll say it. This would be the most consequential investment in veterans policy, veterans programming in Oregon's history, because it would be $20 million-ish per biennium to bring in billions of dollars in services and capacity. And at a time where we are looking at really how our economy functions, when we're looking at middle class and we're looking at minimum wage and we're looking at housing, I can think of no more appropriate bookend to that story than reaching out to veterans and bringing in dollars that they have already earned through their service into every community, every county, every legislative district in Oregon.
So a couple of questions for open up, if I understand. And again, colleagues, Chair Lively came and visited me on this issue, and it's scheduled for work session and rules, and I had asked them to try and get it out on first session deadlines so that it could go through the normal process. We'll see what comes out of the House in terms of that. A couple of the statistics you have in the intent of the $20 million before asking mechanical questions of this. We're presently at 3 of 10 getting roughly benefits that we think that's out there. So we have 30% of our individuals that probably are due veterans are getting that. So the gross rate is about 70% out of the available that's out there, or actually a little bit more of that. And of those that are getting benefits right now, we're at about in just the category of not of direct benefits, not the indirect, which is almost double of the direct.
Right.
Direct benefits we've increased over the last 8 years about $600 million by the efforts of the legislature. That's direct investment. We've seen, I believe, about $1 billion in the indirect funding for health care. So we've been about $1.6 billion in additional funding over the last 8 years for what we've been investing in these VSOs to do. But the growth, if I catch what you're saying correctly, the easy or still the lower-bearing fruit growth comparable to Oklahoma means that we still could increase another $600 million before we are equal with Oklahoma. But that still is going to leave, interestingly enough, about 60% on the table. Does that sound correct?
Yes, sir.
So we're following correctness here. So the goal here is what you're trying to suggest is in order to, frankly, let's just be blunt here, to get the veterans their individual benefits and to reduce the state expenditure on social programs, the goal is to try and get this $20 million as the seed money for expanded VSOs so that we can go after that other 7 of 10 and get those benefits.
Chair Boquist, if I could, in addition to the VSOs, there's also other federal programs that would be coming into play. For example, small business loans for veterans. There's also certain types of transportation, certain types of housing grants that are available with mm-hmm. a small amount of state match that we could untap so that people could get to the hospital more often in the VA system. Yes.
Okay. And by the way, the committee's received several complaints in regards to the medical issues of veterans right now very recently, so intriguing you mentioned that. One of the points that, and I don't know if it's in this bill, and I just throw this out there to see if the type of thing you're saying is that presently, I think someone made mention, it might have been you, Mr. Director, the GI Bill, as example, is to help you enlist in the military. Generally speaking, the most common program now is if you enlist for 4 years, then you get 4 years of what I would say a limited benefit for having the pleasure of being shot at for 3 rotations overseas. However, by doing that and volunteering and getting that benefit, you do lose your, almost guaranteed you lose your Pell Grant status. Is that not correct? Because you no longer qualify for the Pell Grant.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, I have to double check on the dynamics in terms of when you use your GI Bill and the Pell Grant status, but a huge pot of scholarship dollars that could be better leveraged, and making sure not just that veterans are using them, but that they're getting successful outcomes on campus.
There are, in Chair Boquist, there are a number of programs in the last 3 years that have been changed, so you cannot receive benefit from a military program and a civilian program. Concurrent receipt is still an issue, and I believe you're correct, absolutely, on the Pell Grant status.
Right, we've seen recent complaints about that, because the issue is that you yes. volunteer for 4 years to serve your country, and you get the GI Bill as that benefit, but you lose your Pell Grant
right.
because you volunteered to get shot at. So if you were 1960s, the discussion would be is why would I volunteer to get shot at for 4 years when I can just go to school under other circumstances.
Correct.
That's an area, and of course, I know bipartisan Senator Byers raised this issue of like, okay, given this dynamic, maybe we should be looking at different programs in Oregon to come up with getting veterans in. And is this one of those categories that you're trying to work for?
Chair Boquist, as a matter of fact, there was a bill last session that hopefully I can bring back again in the future, but we could do through rule if not. There's basically a bridge grant program for those that are using the GI Bill to help them finish. Mm-hmm. And again, for programs that have more intensity and more wraparound services, it is absolutely intended for that use.
Okay. So question mechanics, so everybody can understand it, because I don't understand the mechanics myself. In the actual bill, obviously there are winners and losers. This would have to go to a vote of the people, and the people would decide whether they want to do this versus something else that we're already doing.
Yes.
Okay. Who's going to jump on the hand grenade here? What's the something else that we're going to replace it with? And, of course, this would be a vote of the people. So.
Chair
or is it something in addition? Are we adding this to another category? How does that mechanic work?
Chair Boquist, yes, there's a finite amount of money always. That said, mm-hmm. When it comes to lottery funds, as you know, they're 18% are set aside for education, 15% are set aside for parks. This would be 2% set aside, and it would be taking from other potential economic development grant options and programs that are actually decided upon by the legislature every 2 years in that discretionary pot of money.
Okay.
So it is designed specifically not to impact education, not to impact parks. In fact, we will implement rules that recommend, or not recommend, that outline how we will not be double dipping into the lottery pot. But it is intended to eat up some of the monies that in the past have been used for economic development grants, programs, et cetera, because we believe it meets the definition of economic development. And it was written to be very flexible. Again, it's not all, clearly all the money's not going to ODVA. There may be some, you know, programs that flow through Business Oregon and others for VANT or for veterans type businesses, et cetera. But we believe it's actually not only not going to take money away from the lottery, but will actually stimulate both the dollars coming in, as well as we believe once people know that the money's going for veteran services. In the past, we had discussion about a separate or what veteran participation might actually add to the revenues for lotteries. I happen to believe that 2 years from now, if this is implemented because the vote of the people will it to be, we will actually find slightly an uptick in revenues because people at least know where those dollars are going to. So I actually think that there are no net losers in this program.
All right. Well, 2 points. You're right. The lottery director has actually agreed with you in testimony before this committee before and said that, you know, if we were going towards veterans, things they think that they're sellable and they could actually put deals. And then, of course, serving on the committee that the good presiding officer and I had a discussion on the floor about the revenue committee, lottery is up, and it's ironically enough because of the huge, you know, mega gazillion billion-dollar thing, and so lottery revenues were increasing, and they've proven so far, like all other sin taxes, to be resilient to economic downturns. So,
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, again to that point on the mechanics, it does not tap into those current restrictions. It comes out of the unrestricted portion, but I would emphasize that it still comes down to the legislature's discretion to how to serve this population better out of that 2% of resources. Mm-hmm. It may still go to education and to better support veterans on community colleges and universities. It may go on to economic development. It would broaden the conversations beyond just Senate and House Veterans Committees to how can these other policy committees better serve veterans across a broad swath of public and private partners.
Right. And I point out that, you know, when the presiding officer put me on the spot the other day on the Senate floor, my observation is that we are unfortunately moving back towards the Vietnam era. And as the farther we get away from a death or a combat role, the challenge we have is that not intentional but maybe unintentional, suddenly veterans become less and less important because they're not immediately on our front spectrum. Madam Vice Chair, some comments or questions so
yes,
you can understand what you're trying to do?
I do have a problem putting this in the Constitution, having it as a Constitution. We've had problems with initiatives being put into the Constitution, and then when changes need to be made, you need to have a two-thirds vote, or I forget what. But anyway, there's no one who supports no one supports it any more than I do on trying to help our veterans, but that's just a red flag for me. Also, I would like to understand the budget better from OLCC. When you say 2%, and that's 20 million, I know you say it'll come primarily from economic development, but then I don't know what that economic development monies are, too. What impact is that going to have wherever that money goes right now? So this is an easy, it is much easier to say have it come from lottery revenues because it's so much a bigger fight for general fund monies. But I'd want to be very careful. I would really need more information from OLCC.
Lottery Commission?
Lottery Commission.
Chair Boquist, to the question of the constitutionality, the only reason we're doing it this way is because Every lawyer in this building over the last 5 years has attested to the fact that set-asides for veteran services would violate, if spent at a lottery, would violate the intention of the economic development piece unless there was something that clarified it. So it has to be a constitutional change for this to be seen as a legitimate expense. If there was any other way, I swear, I don't like messing with the Constitution either. But the way that the lottery was set up and the way that education and parks were put in, they were that expansion of what the use of the lottery is limited to those things and those things only. As far as the monetary side and what it takes away from, again, I believe that every legislative session there are a number of programs and projects that are funded out of lottery that are developed and decided at that time, that they're not fixed cost, that they're not expected to be continuing, that they're decided as projects, et cetera. And this is seen as a long-term general investment in economic development. I understand the concern about the Constitution. I can't fix that part. The part about what it would be taking away from, I simply see this as a statewide commitment for a particular type of grant program over the long term that the citizens have support of. If there was any other way to do it, I would. But my concern that Senator Boquist outlined so well, as time moves forward, it is easier and easier to not get dollars out of the general fund to unlock those dollars. And my argument is, if we are going to be doing it for EITC and we're going to be doing it for other things, this is the time where we can make the most difference. There are still some lives we can affect. And we're not going to do it if we don't have access to some funds.
Director, have anything to add?
Chair Boquist, Senator Montes-Anderson, even beyond the budget and monetary impacts, what I'm excited about this potential is that collaboration across the partners. It is going to help inspire those conversations. By looking through that military and veterans lens, we will have collaborative solutions modeled for veterans and military families, but that have crossover into more deeply serving and better serving all Oregonians, whether it's on aging veterans, whether it's out of the incarcerated veterans task force. It is very hard to bend the costs over a biennium in terms of what drives the state budget. But this is one area that I think we can make a significant difference in and would be well worth that 2%. I have some hesitation on legislating through the Constitution as well. But it is, I think it would have such great value that it brings me to the table.
Senator, any comments? Okay. If the way it sits now, this is scheduled in the far side, and of course it's beyond session deadline, so we don't know whether this will. If the House brings it out of the Rules Committee earlier this week, and if you all can read it effectively on the floor together in bipartisanship and pass it across, then we'll see it, and then we'll know what's the next step on this side for consideration. And of course, the purpose here is to make sure that this committee is aware of what's going on, and at the request of Representative Lively, to pay attention to what they're doing in our peer committee over there. So any additional comments either of you have, and then we'll look
Chair
forward
Boquist.
To seeing what happens.
Yes, sir. One last thing. This has been something that for 5 years has been pushed back and forth. The 2% was not what we were looking for, but it was negotiated with the Speaker, and I believe her word. She says this is a priority for her as well. It's time that we take care of our veterans. I know it's not a perfect instrument. For 4 years, I've tried to find another type of instrument as a civilian through Governor Kulongoski's office. But the need out there is real, it's legitimate, and this is something that will bring dollars into the state of Oregon. I believe it's part of her overall priorities, and I fully suspect that it will not only come over from the rules, but come over with a little bit of energy behind it. And any time this week, you should be receiving phone calls from veterans from across the state emphasizing the fact that this is, in fact, a priority to them.
Well, thank God it's not a gun bill. I'm getting enough of those phone calls already.
colleagues and members of the public, again, we're trying to find out ourselves what is going on. I'm certain that if this comes across to the far chamber on this side and it's heard and whatever committee goes on, there will be a public hearing at that time in whatever committee it ends up in. I appreciate the information, and I guess we'll look forward to see what Chair Lively on that side and the Speaker have in mind for us next. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for
your
colleagues, we do have a meeting on Thursday, and we have some House concurrent resolutions. Looks like a stack of them. So it would be a rather tight scheduled meeting, looking at the entire list that's here. Be flexible, because we are in a short session. And with that, colleagues, we're adjourned for the day. Yeah, colleagues, we're adjourned for the day. Yeah, with that.